Hi, everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I'm Lacey Bogger-Miles, and I'm the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as per usual, is my co-host and partner in crime, Miss Annie Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
It is another day in March.
Nope.
2020.
February 2020. Oh, I was going to say it's February,
but
no.
I was making a March joke. March is eternal. But we are here virtually together. Alone together. Remember that weird thing they tried to make happen? Like hashtag alone together?
Yeah, that didn't work.
But we are not entirely alone, just us together. Once again, we have a guest this week, and it is regular contributor Carmen Krogan. Hey, Carmen.
Hi, and I'm always pleased and surprised and happy to join you when asked.
Yay!
How are you today?
Oh, as I was telling you earlier, it is my birthday weekend, so I'm trying to be all festive and celebrative.
I mean, I fully believe in a birthday season, you know, kind of like Mardi Gras or Lent. Well, I guess more Mardi Gras than Lent, but right. Still. Maybe not this year.
I didn't used to do the birthday thing. Like when I was a kid, like I was like, okay, birthday weeks are dumb. And then like when I was in my 20s, I was like, well, you know, maybe you can do like more birthdays and actually recognize them and have parties. And now like I'm just like, screw it, I don't care. I'm doing an entire birthday week. Like I did a total birthday week this week. My birthday was Monday and like I did an entire like, and even like gifts, just sort of because Amazon is all slow and mail is all slow, like my gifts came one at a time over the course of the week. Like it was kind of amazing. It was like the world wanted me to do it.
Gift of the day.
Know that I got my birthday was back in December, and I did not get my birthday card from one of my best friends until a month later because the postal service is a mess.
I believe it.
Like a card, a physical card from Connecticut took a month to arrive at my home.
Wow. That's insane.
Buy some stamps. That's what I'm saying. Buy some stamps. Anyway, we are talking about The Long Song, which is a masterpiece drama that is currently airing. And I am going to try to make myself take a back seat this week because you guys have read the book this is based on and I have not. So I will let one of you, Carmen, go for it. Summarize this series for the people.
Oh, okay. Well, it takes place in the 19th century near the end of slavery in the British Empire. It takes place in Jamaica on a sugar plantation called Amity. And we follow the life of July. She is a slave that works in the house. And it's her story from childhood through old age, and just the changes that she witnessed and the heartbreak and the joy and the love and all those things that, you know, all the challenges she faced over those years.
Yeah, the book is more expansive. The show really sort of sticks to the period between 1831 and 1838, which is 1831 was the big uprising, the big Christmas uprising where slaves literally burnt down plantations as a way to try to do a bid for their freedom because they'd heard that the King of England, George IV, I think George IV at that point, who was basically thinking about, you know, abolishing slavery and freeing them. So they sort of fought back as sort of a hope that it would, you know, trigger such a thing. It actually took 7 years. I believe slavery was ended in 1838. But we go past that at one point. Like, it's actually referenced that the Queen is doing things, so we know we're in the 1840s. And then towards the end, you sort of jump ahead. In the book, it's kind of a framing device that old July is basically telling the story back, and she's 20 years older, so it's at that point it's like nearly 1860, which means that the Civil War is coming in the United States, which isn't that far from Jamaica. So yeah,
what's interesting is that I haven't read the book, but I mean, that's not the interesting part. I read a lot of books. Don't judge me.
She does.
But
I see your Goodreads.
Yes, my Goodreads is kind of a frightening place. But this is not my normal lane of reading. But anyway, even without having read the book, I totally like I understand the framing device of an older person sort of looking back on their life and recounting it for people. And I got that without reading the book, or like at no point was I like, who is this random old woman?
Right.
I was like, obviously that's July. But I do think it's not an interesting framing device because it's in tons of stories, but it's an interesting choice of a framing device for a story like this, in which, because it's a, I mean, I tried like for a while to think of another way to refer. It's a slavery story.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't often see, like, it's a slavery story that tells you going in that July is going to survive long enough to tell the story.
Right.
And I think that is an interesting kind of perspective to put the story in, because there are all these horrific things that happen, but you know she gets through it before you even see them on screen. And I don't think a lot of protagonists in stories like this are afforded that luxury. It sounds really horrible to call that a luxury, but I don't mean it that way.
No, you're absolutely right. Like, we don't usually hear these stories told from their own points of view. And that's actually one of the reasons why Andrea Levy, who wrote this book, I believe it came out in 2010.
Yes, 2010.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it was right around then. Basically, it was one of the reasons why it was such a big deal is because she was basically writing a historical novel from the perspective of the slave, and not just a slave who like worked in the fields, but like one who is promoted to the house, who because of her relationship with her mistress basically is sort of isolated from the rest of the slaves and sort of sees herself as above them and kind of gets the mindset of her own mistress in that way. And because of that, like, she has a lot of, you know, she has a lot of issues that she has to kind of like deal with, that she kind of looks down on her own people and thinks of herself as sort of above them, when the people who she's sort of identifying with don't see her that way and will never see her that way. And she sort of forgets in time that they don't see her that way and will never see her that way. And when it suddenly comes back around that they do see her that way and slap her with it, it's absolutely traumatic.
Yes, I agree.
I was like, wow, that was really deep.
I mean, it's interesting because she is in the middle. You know, she's because she's in the house, and also because she is favored by certain people. She, you know, you can understand why she starts to see herself in a different way and doesn't relate as much to, you know, her mother was a field slave. And, you know, all the people who knew her growing up, you know, they still consider her part of their community. But at the same time, you know, she lives in a different way than they do. So you can see why she kind of, you know, she can be manipulative, and she can be, you know, she knows what she wants, and she has more of an opportunity to go after those things until she's told she can't. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's a level where, especially from episode one to episode two, episode one's cast feels almost very different from episode
yes.
two. Like, there are definitely characters who carry over, and we can talk about that in a minute. But like, one of the major ones is Sir Lenny Henry, who plays kind of the head of the house slaves, Godfrey.
Uh-huh.
He basically is only in episode one. Like, he doesn't, he disappears after that. And it's a reminder that slavery turnover and death is such a, it was just fast. Like, the fact that a lot of the faces you see in episode one don't make it to episode two.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ones who are younger in episode one suddenly become more important in episode two. Really, that kind of turnover really brings home how rough a life this was.
Yes.
I think I'm gonna. I don't. It's one of those things where I think about, when I think about period dramas that try to tell stories of slavery, I think we are often. What I really liked about this is that as a white American who grew up in the South, I have a very specific idea of like what a slavery narrative is, and I think what is so interesting about this is that it is the same like horrific thing, but it's from a completely different perspective than we as Americans, and I know this aired 2 or 3 years ago in the UK, so we're coming a little late to it.
But December of 2018 is when it aired over there. So yeah, we're almost 3 years.
But I think it is important, and I know I have friends who are like, oh gosh, why can't we ever see stories about people of color, specifically Black people, who are not slaves? But I also feel like it's important to see these sort of different perspectives on slavery itself, because it's the slavery in the British colonies was different than slavery in America, and their experiences were different than the antebellum South. And I was surprised by how different yet how similar it was at the same time. I just think it's interesting, especially because this is such a lane where I think a lot of people are like, can we tell other stories?
Well, you can't tell. There's a level where you can't tell other stories in a way, though, because, you know, it used to be a truism when I was a kid that history is written by the winners. And now that we have a more diversity of voices, now what we have is history is written about what the winners did. And in this case, the winners, the white people, did absolutely horrific things to an entire population just because they looked different. And there is no getting around that. There is no there is no avoiding that. And unless you are willing to confront it head on, this is history that we have to accept as we did this. Like, white people did this. That we were monsters. What went given power, we were monsters. And that's just, I mean, there's until we confront that, we can't learn from it. And until that's confronted, the people who we were monsters to can't get past it. Like, you can't, it's like pretending that, oh, well, if I never go to therapy, then I'm fine. Right? Like, no. Therapy for everyone. Thank you.
Therapy is great. She's right.
Right. Like, I feel very much like this is sort of like, you know, therapy for society in a way when we have shows like this. And, you know, I honestly, like, There are things about this show that I was sort of like, yes, it hits all the beats that you expect it to hit. But at the same time, it does things that are also very different. Like, there is no white savior here. Haley Atwell is horrifying from beginning to end. She is just the absolute worst.
I will say that I felt a smidgen of sympathy for her at various points, but yes, she's terrible.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the sympathy is because she deserved it or because the character deserved it or because I loved Haley Atwell so much. But I do think they're interesting. I do think that with that character specifically, we can come back to this. They do give her more layers than I expected.
Yeah. And yes. I think
for a horrible person, for a monster, she has a lot of layers.
Well, you know, we're supposed to understand that, you know, she's a widow and, you know, she's had to come and live with her brother someplace I don't think she wanted to go, and had no understanding of what she was going to be, you know, what her life was going to be like. And I think she's lonely. But, you know, she's
100%.
But she's shallow, and she's, you know, she's got privilege, and she doesn't, you know, realize that she is, you know, that. Yeah, whatever.
I mean, I think it's why her,
entitled is the word I'm thinking of, you know.
I think it's why her relationship with July is so interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, she really does, in her weird, like, messed up way, value having her in her life.
And yet doesn't respect her.
And she depends on her, and she truly, like, seeks her out at various times of need. But she also refuses to call her by her real name.
Right, right. And, yeah, and then when she's forced to, well, you know, she, you know, when she really is forced to do that by someone else, it's like she didn't even realize that she had another name.
I mean, probably she didn't.
Yeah. Honestly, like, I renamed her, therefore she is mine. Yeah. And my name is what we call her. It's the same thing, like, you know, my cat was not named Max when I got him, but I named him that. And I expect, but that's, people aren't cats.
Right. Right.
Right. Like, that's it. She very much thinks of July as a pet. Mm-hmm. In that way, and that's really just utterly wrong. So I feel like we can't continue unless we talk about episode two here.
Let us try for the people.
Okay. Because in episode two, basically, Carolyn Mortimer, Haley Atwell's character, gets married. And she gets married to Robert Goodwin, who's played by Jack Loudon. And the reason that Goodwin marries her isn't because he's in love with her. He's actually in love with July. And it's how he gets into the house to be with July, because he, despite all of his, you know, I am a liberal person with liberal values, he actually cannot see himself marrying a slave, even though July at that point has become basically the housekeeper. She's basically reached the level of Mrs. Hughes in Downton Abbey.
Right.
And technically Robert Goodwin is the overseer. See, he's really not much more than Mr. Carson. And so, like, you know, Mr. Carson and Mrs. Hughes get married. Like, honestly, like, In a different world, he and she are on the same level, but he can't see her that way because she's black, and that's that.
I actually, I want to rewind for a second, because I feel like one thing I forgot to bring up when we were sort of talking about that, the sort of ways that this show depicts slavery, is the difference between, like, or the lack of difference, really, about at one point in this story, the slaves are freed, and they become not slaves.
Yeah,
but there's really
no other world.
Well, there's almost really no difference. Like, they're not being, I think, sort of, you know, physically assaulted as much, but like, they still don't have any control over their own destinies in the same way that the white characters in this story do. And when you were talking about July and overseer, what's his face, who I literally, like, he looks so much like Sark from Alias to me that I just was just like, Sark, his name is Sark. So but like, and I don't know if that's a distinction that character makes himself between, like, she is a free Negro versus a slave, but I think it's a story, I think it's a distinction that the show, I don't know, I can't decide if I think the show wants us to draw a line there, or to see that there was really no difference as long as the same sort of structures were in place in Jamaica.
I feel like it's a latter.
I don't know enough about this, like, segment of history.
Yeah, I feel like it's supposed to be the latter, that we're supposed to, that it doesn't matter that they were freed, because all the white people simply kept the same system. There was no attempt to change it. And there was no attempt to change it from the top either. Like, it's very nice that the king declared that everybody was, you know, no longer slaves and slavery was over. And it's very nice that Victoria said she would give out payments to those who were affected by slavery. But they didn't actually do anything to make black people's lives better when they did that, and white people were just took the money and kept the system. So it doesn't, in a way, it almost doesn't matter that this happened.
Because at the beginning, when he goes to talk to Caroline about, you know, what the changes he wants to make, and he's like, you know, the housing is so poor and that needs to be improved, and then you never see anything done about that. Like, you know, that was
because no one actually wants to do it. It's all words. Yeah. You know, words, not deeds. It's words, not deeds. Mm-hmm. And when push comes to shove, when he actually gets in front of the slaves and says, well, we have to treat them better, and we have to talk to them better, and we have to make them love us, what does he do? He says, well, you don't have a choice, and I'm going to raise your rents.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't actually, like, he for all his idealistic talk, he doesn't see them anymore. It doesn't see them as human anymore than Carolyn Mortimer does. And he doesn't treat them any better than she does. He just says he's going to. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. because she's so in love with him that she's just like, oh, he's so great. But it doesn't, like, it's like, and July is blind to it too.
Is she really in love with him, do you think?
What, Carolyn or July?
Carolyn first, then July. Carolyn first, because I feel like, I feel like she would have been in, I'm making air quotes for the listeners out there, she would have been in love with any, like, single white man
that
showed up on the island.
I would absolutely agree with that. She is in love with the concept of him more than him.
Yeah, like, she just wanted to get married and not have to run, because when the story starts, she has a brother who is managing the plantation and running things, but he... Let's talk about that in a second. But he dies, and so she takes over, but she doesn't want to run a plantation. Like, no. She's a a white British lady. She hasn't been raised to run a plantation. So look, an able-bodied man. I feel like that's kind of what is happening here more than any real feelings she might have for him. Like, okay, he's hot. That's all I got.
Yeah, I mean,
right? Like, no, to compare it to The Bachelor, like all the women fall in love with The Bachelor because he's the only man there. She falls quote unquote in love with Robert Goodwin because he's the only man there.
Right, and it's not. I don't think she even registers what his claimed, philosophy is about anything. I don't think she cares that he seems like he's going to be kinder or he cares about equality. That doesn't matter to her. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, he's a guy, he's young, he's, you know, he's marriageable, whatever. And, you know, again, and then what horrible, I don't want to, you know, she is horrible, but, you know, what she had to go through, you know, all this was done right under her nose. She knows, everybody knows that he's actually with July, that he's having a child with
her. They get married and he doesn't even come to their marriage bed on their wedding night. He goes to July. And that's a thing that, like, and I'm thinking of the scene where she wakes up in the morning and she realizes that he didn't spend the night with her. He spent the night with July, and she freaks out and she screams. And that was where I was like, well, she is kind of in love with him, or the concept of him. And it's not like she's okay with being betrayed like this, even though she has to live with it.
And by her housemaid, not just another... Mm-hmm. Another woman of her
well,
equal.
And by the woman that she has such a, I don't even know what word to call it, complicated?
Yeah.
Like a complicated relationship with anyway, but also, ugh.
Also, ugh. Yeah, agreed.
I was ughing him in that moment more than her, I think, actually, because he's like, well, now it's okay if I sleep with the help because I'm married.
Yeah, yeah. And this is really, I think, partly what screws with July's mind so much. One of the incredibly striking things for me, in that very first scene at the top of the premiere, where she's screaming Marguerite, Marguerite from her room and not actually leaving her room, just standing there screaming the woman's name over and over again. And July is just like, yep, I'm stealing your buttons. I'm not even coming. Okay, I'm coming really slowly. Like the tiny little rebellions that you do in that situation. And then finally runs in and acts like she's been running crazy and, you know, totally faking it and clearly hates Carolyn in a way. And then in episode two, like once he moves in and she's with him and she has her own little house, her own little room in the house and everything, she starts being that person screaming, and she's screaming at the new house slave, basically Molly. She basically stands there and just screams Molly's name over and over and over again in the same way. And it's really striking because you see her basically becoming Carolyn in a way, because Carolyn's raised her and this is how she knows how to behave and this is how she thinks to behave.
Men are terrible.
Yes.
Did you want to go back to the brother?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
The weak-chinned, sad brother.
I don't know that I ever actually learned his name.
Yeah, I can't.
I was like, he's just the brother.
Yeah, I can't think of his name either.
No one knows. We don't know.
He was also widowed, apparently. That's why he had his sister come out, I guess. I don't know.
It's interesting to me that, and I think someone touched upon this a minute ago, it's really interesting to me how tonally different the first episode is from the latter two. And maybe that's because the show thinks that we need to be sort of forced to confront the horrible things that are happening to people on this plantation. But I was shocked by how just sort of brutal the scene was, where they were just going to kill... I was really bad about learning people's true names in this show, and also do not remember this kid's name. I referred to him in my head as Bruno Mars.
Elias.
No.
Thank you.
No, this is the guy.
Oh, you mean Nimrod? Nimrod.
Yeah.
Yes, Bruno Mars. because he just for some reason really looked like.
Yeah,
Bruno.
He did.
So it's fine.
I can see exactly why you.
I'm
why
a terrible person. Yeah. Send me your hate mail. Anyway, I was really shocked by how brutal the whole sequence was when he is dragged out and they're plotting to kill him to cover up for the fact that the brother committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And then for like a hot second, it looks like they're actually going to get away. But it's a false hope, and he is killed just as mercilessly as he would have been in the bedroom and where they had been hiding. And it was really like that first episode for me had a really harsher cast to it than the two that followed. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I feel like that there's definitely a level where, you know, things are definitely uglier after, or things are definitely different after slavery ends, and things are definitely uglier in the first, you know, like if we think about it, like when the not actually slaves anymore basically push back on Robert when he does things, like in a different world they would be whipped for it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a level now where they can push back, and so things have changed, and so things aren't quite so violent and so ugly in that way. I also think that we also get to know a lot more of the sort of like the whole like ensemble of slaves in the village. Yeah, we get to know the village much better in episodes 2 and 3. Again, in episode 1, I think Lenny Henry's fantastic, but he really is sort of a focal point, and everyone is sort of like background to him. And once he disappears after that first episode, we start to really like get to know like some of the others. We really sort of get to see like, you know, Miss Clara and Hannah and Dublin and some of the others. By the way, I don't know if you noticed, Dublin Hilton is from Bridgerton. He's the older Duke of Hastings.
Oh.
Yep. And Hannah is Jo Martin from Doctor Who.
Oh.
Wait, really?
Yep.
This
entire cast is like, oh my, is where
it's
have
a,
you...
Hey, it's that guy.
Yeah, it's a hey, is that guy. Moses is from Miss Scarlet, and the Duke is James Richards. Let's see, who else did I recognize that I was just like, oh my god, it's that person. Tamara Lawrence, who is the lead, she's been in so many things. Like she's really
an incredible actress.
She was actually last in Small Axe, mm-hmm. which I told everybody to watch, and I really hope you did because it was really, really great. But like, you know, it's just really impressive to me, like the cast that they got for this. Elias, who I was thinking you were talking about before, he was in Raised by Wolves over on was Raised by Wolves on Peacock or HBO Max? I forget.
HBO Max. I don't know why I know that.
And then there's the girl from Charmed who actually passes and actually really marries a white dude. Crap, what's her name? Madeline Mantuck. Right? Like I think this cast is so great, and I'm so glad that in episodes 2 and 3 we get to see them more and get to know them more.
Mm-hmm.
I also looked up because I wasn't as familiar with Tamara Lawrence, and you know, she has a lot of theater credits, and she was in King Charles III and various other things. But also, just a little bet you didn't know, there's a movie that came out last year called Kindred that was produced by Jack Loudon's production company, and it has Fiona Shaw and Jack Loudon and Tamara Lawrence is in it. So, you know, it's like how those things come around. I mean, you know, they probably enjoyed working together.
I mean,
there's only
20 people working in the UK acting industry.
That's what they say.
At any given time. On a different topic, unless we want to talk about brutality some more, which I'm sure we will, because it's woven throughout the story. But one thing I was also struck by is the way that the Long Song uses music. I think it was really another really unexpected thing for me, that the way that the slaves sort of communicated and showed community and bonded together through song and through sort of spiritual singing, and I thought it was really well done, and I wish I knew more about that kind of thing so I could talk about it more, you know, more better. But I think that for me, that was a really standout part of the show.
And in contrast, at the Christmas party, when they made some of them play Christmas carols and were complaining about how bad the music was, it's like, well, it's not their music, you know?
Yeah. And like, they're actually not that bad. Really. They're not that bad. There's no reason to complain about
them.
Exactly. I mean, the Christmas scene in general is just an amazing, everything about it is so defines the characters in a way that I think I don't see premieres do quite so much. But, you know, this only has three episodes. They don't have, you know, there's an economy of storytelling that goes on, especially the whole, we're going to use the used bed sheets instead of the fine linen. these tiny ways that they rebelled, mm-hmm. and people who are in bondage rebel is done so well,
I know that music is often such a big part of mm-hmm. that too. Yeah. So
yeah, and I think that also really, I think that leans into the music part, because they're also using the music as a way to rebel and as a way to keep mm-hmm. going and as a way to bond. That can't be stopped, you know. Like, there's no stopping that kind of bonding. You know, we can't. It's not like they're going to outlaw music, especially if they make it especially
no
if they
dancing
make it
in this town,
right? Well,
Kevin Bacon to the rescue.
But especially when they part of the reason why so many, you know, spirituals have the Christian overtones is that, well, of course we can't ban it. It's they're learning Jesus, right? Like, that's, you know, that's a whole thing.
I have more in depth thoughts on that, but this is not a religious podcast, so it's fine. I like what you said a second ago, Annie, about economy of storytelling, because I feel like the show is three episodes. I don't really feel like it feels like it needs to be longer than three episodes.
No. And for people who binge on PBS Passport, this really is one that you could literally watch it. Like, I hate to call TV shows 3-hour movies or 5-hour movies, because it's really that goes against the spirit of television. But this is one where actually I think that applies.
I watched it in one afternoon.
I don't know. I've been trying to decide whether or not I think this is a hopeful story. And I don't know. I'm torn. I think it is and it isn't. Like, this story is full. It is a hopeful story, I think, in that July, we know going into it that July survives, that she lives through this, that she gets at least the degree of autonomy that allows her to tell her own story in her own words. But literally everyone in this show is horrible. Horrible.
I also think, and this is
even July herself is horrible for a lot of the story.
She is.
Like, everyone is awful.
There is also a point, and I think this is something that they take out of the show, is that in the books it's not just old July telling her story. It's old July telling her story to her son. And there's actually an argument that's going on between them that we don't get, because they just make it old July telling her story in the TV show. There's a thing in the books where old July doesn't want to talk about things that her son thinks are important. And there are places where she's definitely embellishing and she's definitely prettying things up and she's sort of fantasizing how things were more than they actually were.
I do think the show gives you that to a certain extent.
It does a little bit.
I'm just thinking of the opening sequence in which July tells you, breaking the fourth wall, tells mm-hmm. you that this is not going to be a story of a white woman trying to catch a husband on her plantation. Like, that this is going to be a very different kind of story. And I feel like there is it's not like an unreliable narrator per se, but it's like an awareness of a narrator, like mm-hmm. an awareness that this is a story that someone is telling, which is not the same thing as seeing a story play out.
Yeah. And I would say that we get more of July being an unreliable narrator in the books than we do here. And I think, honestly, I kind of understand why they cut that, because I think that would have confused things more. And it streamlines it a little bit for us as viewers to believe what July tells us, unless she then suddenly says, actually, I'm lying.
Yeah. Which she does a couple times in the show.
And I think that's actually very important, because I think the TV show, especially for people who've never read the books, really needs us to believe July's story and really needs us to believe how ugly these people were. Because otherwise we might start saying, well, maybe Carolyn Mortimer wasn't the most terrible person in the world. When, no, actually, honestly, like, probably July is being a little bit nicer about her than she probably really was.
Right. And with the Robert character, too, it's like, you know, you see that he struggles. He's trying to please his father. He's trying to make his father proud. He's trying to be, you know, this better person, this person that believes in equality and whatever. But then when the reality of economics happens, then it shows who he really turns out to be. And it really kind of like breaks his mental state, you know, there for a while. And it's like, yeah, and you can empathize with that, I guess, you know, but yeah, he's still... Yeah, he wasn't
July,
great.
I think, empathizes with him. I think there's a level where in the story, July is much nicer about him and empathizes with him in a way that doesn't actually make sense if you stop to think about what the reality of the situation probably was. But the show has kind of removed that so that it feels more like a real love story. Yeah. And I wonder if that's also, you know, I think that's also probably important that we believe that there was a real love story there. I think, again, that the show wants
is
us.
Is it important for us to believe it or for July to believe
it? Oh, it's very important for July to believe it. Absolutely. But I think there's a level where they want the audience to buy into it so that when things go south, it feels almost like a punch. It feels like a punch in the jaw.
I must have had a really harsher read on Robert.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Clearly, worthless character. Did not need to know his name. Because I never. I don't know. To me, he was kind of gross from jump.
Well, because, I mean, what he's done is gross.
Like, yeah, what he does is gross. The way that he tries to make what he does okay, the self-justification of it's okay if I sleep with a slave because I married the mistress. Or I guess July is a free woman at that point.
Yes.
But like it's he seems nasty to me from the very beginning. So I kind of wanted her to get away from him anyway. Like I didn't really believe in maybe that's why I sort of read it as like I never read it as a super great love. I read it as July being very sort of smartly calculating about like here, not like in a bad, and I don't mean that in a negative sense at all. I just, for me, it felt like watching her realize that this guy was into her and, you
playing
know,
that for all it's worth.
Yeah. Yeah, like when you're in a terrible situation, you latch on to the things you think can get you out of it. I don't blame her for any of that. I think that she clearly has her heart broken by things that happen at the end of the story, but I don't know that losing him is one
right.
of those things.
Well, you know, and she had that example of Clara, and they were kind of like competing, and she wanted him to know that her father was white. You know, she made sure he knew her father was white, and he was from Scotland, and she wanted to see the book and all that stuff. So that was all very much in her, you know, she put on the pretty dress, and, you know, she went over.
Oh, my God, can we talk about these horrible sleeves?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Like,
sorry, like, this is just me diving into the shallow end for a second, but I want to light all their clothing on fire. Like, why does it, like I said, like, my knowledge of all this is very, like, I grew up in Richmond, so my knowledge of sort of this time period is a very different sort of silhouette, but it's like they took a hoop skirt and put it on the top instead of the bottom.
I absolutely love when Miss Clara like starts making fun of Carolyn's dresses. And it's just like, she wears printed cotton. I mean, for God's sakes, right? Like how out of trend can you be? Like, that's just such a great moment.
Yeah. Oh, but I was going to say too about the Scotland thing. I had to laugh to myself because, you know, July asked Robert if he's ever been to Scotland, and he says no. And the funny thing is, Jack Loudon is super, super Scottish. And, you know, I'm just thinking, what is he thinking when he says, no, I've never been there, but I have a book about it. You know, he's like super Scottish.
Does he like have a real accent? I'm always impressed with people who can...
Oh, yeah. If you hear him talk in real life, it is super Scottish.
You know how like people are always shocked when they learn that Hugh Laurie is actually British?
Yeah.
Go on to Jack Loudon's Instagram, and he is like, you know, he's always going up for walks in the mountains, and he's always, you know, he's just super, super Scottish. I'm sure he's like all for Scottish independence. And anyway, yeah, so I just thought that was kind of like an inside joke for me that he said, oh, no, I've never been there. But anyway, yeah, I just I remember when I read the book, I thought for a moment that it could be a, like a true love story. And then I remember being disappointed. And it, I kind of got that same feel again, just for a moment, even though I knew what was going to happen. And then I read...
I think I'm just really cynical, yeah. is what we're learning here.
But I read also that the writer, the one who adapted the book, is named Sarah Williams. And I saw that in her credits, she co-wrote Becoming Jane. And I thought, you know, in a way, this is kind of that forbidden love kind of story again. And, you know, how you know it's not going to end well, but you really hope that it will kind of thing. I don't know. I just, that's how I felt about that. So, yeah, I wanted to give it a chance. I wanted to believe that that was really, that they were really in love. But, yeah, you know, it's not going to work out.
Okay, let's, we are running up on time, but let us do a quick round the table about... sort of how you feel about the show generally. Keep it vague for the people who haven't watched it yet. But, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down. Feels like a very diminutive way to talk about a show like this, but I don't actually know how better to describe. Like, final thoughts, yeah. Really. Let's do that.
Okay. I would say thumbs up because I, as having read the book 10 years ago, it brought back a lot of what I remembered about the book. I thought, you know, even though it did have to leave out some of the things like Annie was talking about, I thought that it really represented the story very well. And, you know, I thought it was, the acting was good. I thought, you know, I thought it was just a good representation of that story. And that, you know, Andrea Levy's just, you know, she's, unfortunately she passed away a couple years ago, but she, you know, she's really good at writing about that Jamaican English experience. And I would say it was well worth watching.
Annie?
I would say that it's, if you haven't read the book and you think that this is just your usual slavery story, to give it a chance, because it is there's a reason that this is on PBS Masterpiece, and it's not because it's the story you've seen 100 times. And I think that's really important for people to know, because I think there's a level, especially in the marketing right now, where I felt like this is being this feels like the slavery story you've seen each time, and you feel like you must dutifully watch because that makes you a good white person. And this story is so much better than that.
Yeah, that kind of is where I'm at with it, too. Like, I feel like, I don't think this is going to be a show that I like watch again ever, but I think it was important to watch it the once, if that makes sense. Like, I think it's an important show to watch. I totally understand why it's on Masterpiece. I understand why PBS was like, we should bring this story to American audiences. It is not what I would call a particularly enjoyable watch, but it's a good one. So that's where I'm at. And where we're at, I think, is out of time for this week. So, Carmen, tell the people listening in the darkness, or the light, I don't know, that was creepy, where they can find you on the internet.
I'm on Twitter. My handle is BritTellyAddict. I share all of my thoughts about TV there and anything that I write for televisions, which is basically where I write, and then you'll also find my posts there.
Annie, you're up.
I am Annie Bundle, basically everywhere on the internet. I'm at Annie Bundle on Twitter. I'm at Miss Annie Bundle on Facebook. You can find pictures of my cats at Annie Bundle on Instagram. I am a staff writer at Elite Daily, and I also write a lot for a site called televisions.org. You may have heard of it. I also freelance around the web, including covering American Gods for the AV Club right now. So, if you want to basically, if you're curious about what I'm writing, go to Twitter and follow me there, because I basically retweet all of my bylines, and it's the fastest, easiest way to figure out what I've written this week. So thanks.
I follow both of these lovely ladies on social media, and I can vouch for the quality of their content. I myself am Lacey MB, LACYMB on Twitter, and pretty much everywhere else because I'm lazy and that's just the name I picked. But I write a lot here at Televisions. I also write elsewhere around the entertainment web, but I always tweet my bylines, so give me a follow. Be my friend. I want more pictures. Ha! I want more people who are pictures, your avatars, to talk to in these alone times. If you just want the pictures of my kittens, who I will let everyone know are clawing at my door where I'm recording this because they would like to eat, you can follow them on Instagram at Baker and Hammer. The show and the pod live on social media at Tele_Visions on Twitter and Televisions Blog, all one word, on Facebook. Televisions, the website, is brought to you by WETA. And if you like what we do, visit televisions.org and click on the donate button up top to help us keep doing it and support public media at the same time. We are done for another week. Another episode in the can. It's really interesting how regular doing our show this way has become. So do us all a favor, wear a mask, wash your hands, take hand sanitizer everywhere, do the hard work of figuring out how to get a vaccine appointment, because it is a challenge. I'm on multiple waiting lists. I don't know, good luck. March is coming, or the second March, I guess, which is a dark, scary time, and we are only going to get through it together. So take care of each other. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.